up on this episode of DL Weekly, Project Stardust coming to an end, the icy peaks are repaired, more extra hours for pass holders,
new adult beverages at Trader Sam's, holiday filming at Disneyland, new discounts, we talk about the partner statue and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Welcome to DL Weekly, a podcast about Walt's original Magic Kingdom, Disneyland. We cover the latest news and information from the resort, test our skills at trivia, and have a discussion about the parks every week. We invite you to send in your feedback and stories. Our contact information can be found at dlweekly.net. Now sit back, keep your hands and arms inside the podcast, and enjoy this week's show.
Hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of November 20th, 2019. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Tig Bushman. We'd like to send a shout out and a big thank you to all of our patrons for supporting the show. This is what makes DL Weekly possible. Our patrons get some pretty nice perks like access to our Discord chat, live shows, some DL Weekly swag, and more. If you'd like to learn more, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Have you taken advantage of your free year of touring plans yet? Well, why not? It's as easy as contacting Concierge to book your next Disney vacation. James, Mike, and Scott would love to provide you with this excellent service, along with helping you plan a great Disney vacation at no additional cost to you. You already know you want to go to the parks, so why not contact Concierge and get the planning started? Remember that dining reservations start at the 90-day mark, and they can help you with those as well. So the earlier you get started, the better.
Well, it's that time of year again where we want to hear from you. If you have a few minutes, please head on over to dlweekly.net/survey and fill out our listener survey. This will help us understand what the community likes, doesn't like, and how we can make DL Weekly even better for everyone.
Now let's get to the news. After long last, most of the entrance to Tomorrowland is free and clear of the French fry rocks that were installed with the last refurbishment to the land back in 1998. The crowd flow is greatly improved when the park is busier, such as around the parade and firework times. There is still some work to be done with some of the planters and a utility building that is still standing behind walls, but overall, a much needed improvement.
Now, I saw some pictures of this, and I was actually a little surprised that some of the area that they kind of cleared out has been remade into kind of like these planter areas where there's like some grass or some other plants. I kind of thought they were just going to like open that whole area up and not replace that stuff. I'm glad that they are adding some type of greenery or something because I do think it looks nice. There are rumors that that big grass area that's open now is going to become some type of feature is going to be built there. And then of course over with this building that's apparently some of their infrastructure and whatnot that they need to keep there for whatever the reason is. I haven't heard a specific thing that that building is for.
Just that it's a utility building.
Right. And they can't get rid of it for whatever reason. Mm-hmm. So I think it looks really nice. I'm glad that it's open. I'm interested to see what comes from the other part of the entrance where they've got the, where they're doing that work on the facades of both Astro Blasters and Star Tours, which is also kind of part of the entrance.
See, the biggest difference to me is, of course, the French fry rocks. But the other thing that seemed like a small change but made a big impact was, if you remember, when you walked into Tomorrowland, right kind of in the center, you're looking, the Astro Orbiter is right in front of you. There used to be this kind of, I don't know, this thing that was there that had a sign on it, and they took that
out. More French fry rocks.
So that, yeah, it was like the baby French fry rock. But that's been taken out too. So that, removing that piece, I think, is going to help the flow much, much better. The other thing that's nice too is just, even though the footprint of the rocks is still, you know, planter areas, I think just not having the rocks kind of jetting into the area also helps make it feel more open. It might actually even be more open now because you don't have to kind of walk further out around the rocks than what the pavement was, if that makes sense. But yeah, I'm super curious to see what it is that they're going to put there. Obviously, it's not done. A lot of people were very excited because part of the area actually is grassy, but there isn't a fence around it. So you could go like lay in the grass if you really wanted to.
I'm sure they discourage that.
Well, could you imagine with how many people visit the park, how trampled and muddy and just awful that
grass. Well, did you see that construction video from Fresh Baked a few weeks ago? So they had that whole new pathway that they made from the parking garage, from the pedestrian bridge.
Yeah.
And there was a section of grass that they had there that they didn't put a fence around. Well, people walked through it to get to the parking lot instead of following the path, and it destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
So they're doing something different with it now. But I was very sad to see that. But that people are going to take a shortcut if they can. People are generally lazy, I would say. I will say that I think that, like, I don't understand the point of the French fry rocks to begin with. Like, nothing screamed tomorrow about it. It looked ugly to me. I mean, I guess it looked like the Astro Orbiter was, like, coming out of the ground or something, but
you know, it'd be interesting to kind of look that up and see what the thought process was. Mm-hmm. My only thought about it was maybe it was supposed to look like a different planet,
maybe,
and like the surface of a different.
I do like the version of these that they have in Magic Kingdom because they've painted them that kind of blue color and it looks very kind of otherworldly and cool, and it kind of goes with the aesthetic of Tomorrowland. This just seemed like I did like it. And I didn't understand why they waited so long to take care of it. Although I am waiting for I have a pretty strong feeling that come spring, the People Mover tracks are going.
It seems to me like there's a lot of focus on Tomorrowland right now, not just from, you know, us, the people who love the park, but I feel like the park is really focusing on Tomorrowland. Mm-hmm. I would love to see a major overhaul. I don't think we're going to quite see that, but it feels like we're moving in that direction.
Sure. Yeah. Well, it is possible that by the time you listen to this, that both sides of the Matterhorn might be opened again. Rockwork was being completed last week on the section that came apart back in August, causing one side of the attraction to be down ever since.
It's so crazy to me that this has taken so long, but I'm so excited that it's almost finished because the wait times on this attraction have just been crazy. It doesn't matter if the park is busy or if the park is slower. The wait times have just been very, very high for this.
Definitely not a
high
capacity attraction with one side.
No, but
I'm just glad that our fears have been put away.
Yes.
They didn't tear it down or whatever else we were dreading. But I'm sure that people that love the Matterhorn will be even more happy now that once this reopens, that they won't have to wait as long. Plus, if you're like me, I really liked the side that was closed. So,
see, the other thing too that I kind of wonder, and I mean, we'll never know, but do you think that it doesn't seem like it was such an extensive repair. Do you think maybe it just took so long because they were focusing manpower on other parts of the park that took priority? Or maybe was it a little bit more extensive and they're just kind of making it, oh, look, it's, you know, we're good now. You know, they didn't want to get into how serious it was.
I feel like it's probably like anything like this, right? Like, I'm sure there's a lot of bureaucracy that went along with it. And it was probably a lot of people together probably trying to figure out what the best course of action for it was. I assume that there were people that were like, why don't we just repair what's there? Well, maybe some of the other wood is rotting and we should inspect that. So maybe they did like a whole inspection that we didn't
hear or
know about that took time, you know, because sometimes, you know, you get like an evaluation or something, or somebody comes and does a whole like report on it or whatever, and you don't get that for a while because they're reviewing photographs and making their notes or whatever. That could be part of it. I just think it was probably a bureaucracy thing where I'm sure that there were people that had different ideas of how they wanted it fixed. Somebody probably was like, just slap some concrete on there and be done with it. And I feel like some other people were like, let's do it right so we don't have this problem anymore. But I also think that they probably spent some time reviewing the rest of the mountain to make sure that there wasn't going to be another thing like this, because why reopen it just to close it again in, you know, a month?
Right. Well, and they lucked out because it didn't, you know, this could have been a very serious issue. It could have fallen on a track, dare say on a bobsled. So I think they were very lucky that when this big piece of facade came off, that it, you know, didn't cause any injuries or anything like that. So I'm sure they were very, very thorough to make sure that this wasn't going to happen again.
Yeah.
Well, next year, after 24 years of operation, the Indiana Jones Adventure will go down for its first major refurbishment. Permits filed with the City of Anaheim state that the work will include steel work to replace the centerpiece of the attraction, the bridge. Other details, such as dates and other work to be completed, has not been announced. The attraction celebrates its 25th anniversary in 2020.
This is really weird, because when I was writing this, I was like, wow, it's been around for 24 years. That's crazy. But then the 25th anniversary, I have seen for years that one of the things they were concerned about was the fact that like it has never gone down for a major. It's gone down for like little 1-2 week
That's
refurbishments,
crazy.
But not for anything major.
Mm-hmm.
And every attraction goes down for a major refurbishment
right.
every at least few years. So I thought it was interesting. I guess it was such a headliner attraction, and it was one of the biggest. It was one of the biggest, you know, e-tickets before Galaxy's Edge was constructed in the park, right? Like recent wise.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so I think that they just felt like they couldn't spare the capacity or shut down such a popular attraction. I know that I'm glad that it's finally going to be getting a major refurbishment, because I do think that there are some things that are causing problems. I know like when we were there, it seemed like it was down quite often. So I don't know if it's
yeah.
related to some of these things that they're going to do. But I know like from talking to people in our chat and stuff too, it seems like Indiana Jones is constantly having problems, and I think it's time to fix it.
It is interesting because I don't know if we're just more aware of how often Indy goes down because we now have the app, and so we can see in real time if it's going or if it's not going. Whereas
sure.
before, you would just walk past and see what the wait time was.
But even the times we walked past and it was closed, we're like, again?
Yeah, it definitely was more frequent. But yeah, I don't know. It needs some TLC. I am curious to see what they do. Again, kind of like with Snow White, I'm a little terrified that they're doing, whenever they say major refurbishment, that just makes me a little scared. Like, whoa, what are you going to do? But I just really think that they'll probably, hopefully, just be plussing.
I'm wondering if they're going to plus that bridge, because like right now the bridge doesn't like move or anything. Like everything's, you know,
yeah.
on the hydraulic.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm wondering if they're going to add some like effects to make it seem even more precarious.
Maybe.
I mean, that is literally the centerpiece. Like, it is in the middle of that big room.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm interested to see what they do with that. And I'm hoping that they fix or swap out some effects that they've done that haven't worked for a while. You know, there's a falling rock effect. There's that stupid rats falling into the thing, that mist screen thing that never seems to work right
mm-hmm,
either.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping they come up with something. One thing I really hope that they add, and I don't think it would take much effort, is in the Tokyo version at Disney Sea, they have a section where you're driving, and like right now in our version, it's just a black wall that, you know, it's that section towards the end where you're just kind of in a black room for
sure.
a while before you get into the dart room. There's a section in the Tokyo version right there that they have, like, it looks like a face, and it shoots smoke at you, but it looks like it's shooting a fireball at you.
Wow.
And you kind of move out of the way. I think that would be something, especially if they're doing a major refurb. It reminds me of the type of work they could do with, like they did with Big Thunder Mountain Railroad when they added the whole dynamite
mm-hmm,
at the end.
Mm-hmm.
That could add something, and I think people would really think it was cool, because that's kind of like the dud section of the attractions, like one of a couple rooms where there's just
yeah.
nothing.
See, and I think that those are almost placed there on purpose. It's, you know, oh, you kind of have that, okay, we're safe feeling, and then suddenly something else happens. So it'll be interesting to see what happens.
What do you think about almost 25 years old? Does it seem that old to you?
So I have not been going to the parks as long as you have. So
sure.
I have only known Indy. Like, Indy's always been there for
right.
all of my visits. So to me, 25 years makes sense to me, I guess.
Sure.
But
okay.
you like were there the summer that it opened.
It's true.
So
I don't remember Adventureland without Indiana Jones, if that helps.
I can't, you know, I've never visited an Adventureland without Indiana Jones, and it's kind of hard for me to think about that land without that attraction.
Yeah. I promise this is the last refurbishment story this week. There just happened to be a lot of stuff going on with upcoming refurbishments and whatnot, but beginning January 6th, the Carthay Circle restaurant will be unavailable for dining as it undergoes a renovation. The renovation is scheduled to be completed by January 31st, so not that long. Disney has not shared any details of what will be changing, if anything, or if it's just to freshen up the location.
I'm curious about this too, because we were just there for the D23 trip back in August. That was the first time I had ever been in Carthay
mm-hmm.
Circle. I just thought it was beautiful.
It
we
was.
Got to sit, you know, I don't even really know how to describe where we sat. We kind of sat, but it was underneath the big mural that's kind of on that
in the middle of the
ceiling.
Upstairs
kind
dining
of,
room.
Yep, the middle of the upstairs dining room. And, you know, it was just beautiful, but I don't know. I've got a couple of feelings of it. You know, it does feel dated, but I think that's on purpose.
Yep.
I think it's supposed to feel, you know, like it's from like you're sitting in like the 40s. So I don't know if maybe if they're going to change. I don't know how they change that, though, unless they change the actual theming of it. And they
mm-hmm.
kind of, I don't know. I have no idea what they could do for this unless they're just doing simple things like swapping out the carpets, maybe touching up paint, you know, stuff that you can't do with an operating restaurant.
Right. I'm guessing what you just said. I'm guessing they're going to rip out the carpets. I'm guessing they're probably going to reupholster the chairs, redo some of the stuff, you know,
maybe
touch up some of the
kitchens
paint
or something.
Yeah. I assume that like it's just going to be, you know, something because this isn't that much time for them to do like a major rework.
Right.
It's only
right.
3 weeks. So I think, you know, getting all of those different trades in there at the same time to do painting and carpet and stuff, like it just needs to happen. I mean, when did Carthay Circle open? I mean, I guess it's been almost 10 years. So with the amount of traffic they have in there, it's probably time for that stuff to be refreshed, mm-hmm. especially with as like fancy of a restaurant as it
yes.
is, you know, a higher end dining establishment.
Well, annual pass holders will get an extra hour to experience one of the most popular attractions this time of year. From December 9th through December 11th, the Haunted Mansion Holiday will be open for an additional hour for pass holders to enjoy. A valid annual pass and photo ID will be required to utilize this extra time in Jack's version of Christmas. We also wanted to mention that now through Friday the 22nd, there is another AP event going on for It's a Small World. So same thing, it's kind of an after hours event. Make sure you go back there before the park closes to take your trip around the world on the happiest cruise. And the other cool thing too is this one has some sort of a special photo op too. So I don't know if it's, I kind of feel like it's probably a fun photo op with a photo pass photographer like in front of it with it all lit up and
sure.
it's Christmas best.
Sure. Yeah. I don't know. Is this something, as an annual pass holder yourself, and I know you don't live around there, but let's pretend that you lived around there.
Yes.
Is this something that like you're happy that is like an added benefit, or is this something that just seems kind of odd?
Oh, see, I think it's fun, especially because these are both very popular attractions this time of year. I mean, the Haunted Mansion Holiday always seems to have crazy wait times. Mm-hmm. And I've never got to experience It's a Small World Holiday,
it
but
also
I assume that
times.
It has crazy wait times as well. So it is nice to kind of have it. And like you and I've talked before, we really love being in the park at night. It's just more calm and it's more peaceful and it's just more beautiful because they have these things lit up so well. And I would love to see all the holiday decorations on the facade of It's a Small World. Plus you get the fun little extra bonus photo pass thing. So I think that's fun.
I think I would rather have this type of after hours, extra hour thing than something earlier in the morning. Because sometimes they offer stuff in the morning, and I'm not a morning person. So, again, like you said, adding it during the night, even better.
Well, and like,
well, on a Christmas, you need the night, mm-hmm. kind of.
Yep, it's just a little bit more magical at night.
Well, a holiday tradition has returned to the Grand Californian Lobby this season. The massive gingerbread house features Chip and Dale this year. If the large display inspires you, there's also a build-your-own gingerbread experience available for $70 per person and includes all the things you need to build your own holiday gingerbread treat.
This would be really fun. And again, if I was in the area and I could check these things out, I had so much fun going and checking out the display that they had for Halloween with Oogie Boogie. I'm sure this gingerbread house probably just makes the whole lobby smell delightful. It's just so fun. I think it's so cool and creative that they make these edible masterpieces, mm-hmm. and they put them out on display.
One thing that I thought was interesting was in this Disney food blog post that we have linked in our show notes, is that they kind of compared it to the fact that in Disney World, I kind of wish we would do this here, in Disney World of the Grand Floridian, they mm-hmm. actually have a gingerbread house that is, you literally can walk in.
Yeah, it's a little store.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that that's super cool. And of course, you can buy the little pieces of gingerbread shingles and stuff mm-hmm. there. This Chip and Dale looks amazing, I think, in this too. So, you know, the decorating thing, I think $70 is a little pricey for building a gingerbread house, considering the fact that I could go to Walmart for probably less than $20 and get all the same stuff. I know that you don't get like,
you get hot cocoa cookies, snack mix, a holiday-themed apron.
It's still not 70 bucks. I could buy all that stuff at Walmart and still be less than 70. So that's my only concern, is that that it's a little pricey. But, you know, more power to Disney if people pay that. I'm sure there's somebody that'll pay it, so.
Well, three new alcoholic beverages are available at Trader Sam's this holiday season. The first beverage, called Jungle All the Way, contains Fernet Branca, Kahlua, lime juice, pineapple juice, and coconut cream. Peppermint Barks is a mix of El Dorado 8-Year Rum, Rumplemintz Peppermint Schnapps, ginger syrup, lemon juice, Coco Real Cream of Coconut, pomegranate juice, and is topped with mint leaves and a candy cane garnish. Finally, Ginger Snaps contains Hendrick's Gin, Canton ginger liqueur, lemon juice, ginger syrup, and cinnamon syrup, shaken and topped with cinnamon and a candied ginger garnish. That was a tongue twister.
Yeah. I was glad that you had this one, because I saw, when I was typing this out, I saw Fernet Branca, and I was like, nope.
Which, I'm sorry to anybody that knows how you actually, I may have mispronounced some of these words. So for me, I think Jungle All the Way sounds the best. I don't know, just sounds fun and fruity. The ginger one sounds really delightful too, the ginger snaps, but I'm not a big gin fan myself.
I think the one that looks the best for me is the peppermint bark. Mm-hmm. I really like the coloring and stuff of it. However, I'm not really like a hard liquor person, so like none of these I'm really that excited about personally. But they do look pretty, and I'm sure there's lots of people who are really going to enjoy these drinks. So I like that they're trying some different things. Of course, you know, peppermint schnapps is a common, you know, thing that people put in drinks. So it's nice that they're utilizing that to kind of give that holiday feel. And of course, the naming of the drinks is kind of awesome. Yes. Somebody sitting in a room somewhere coming up with stuff must be having a good time. Well, the resort has had major success with the famous churro toffee. So how could they make it better? Well, they created a churro marshmallow wand that is marshmallows dipped in white chocolate and caramel and covered in churro toffee crumbles. This is sure to be a big hit around the resort, as we have seen so many people enjoy the churro toffee online. And of course, we enjoyed our churro toffee. Mm-hmm. We had a listener send us some, and then we got some while we were in the park.
Yes.
And it is very good. If you follow, I think it's the Disney Hungry Instagram handle that I follow that like is constantly, you'd think that they got paid per post about churro toffee, because they are constantly posting about it. So I'm sure that this is going to be fun. I'm not a huge fan of marshmallows. That's my only hang up. I love white chocolate. I love caramel. I love the churro toffee. If this wasn't marshmallows, I think I would be like, if it was like a cake pop that was like the same thing, but mm-hmm. cake, I'd be there.
So yeah, this is interesting, because as Tag said, the churro toffee is super popular, but the marshmallow ones have also been a popular treat at the resort. Personally, I've never tried one, and I don't quite understand the appeal, but this one seems interesting to me. I feel like I would need to share this with somebody. It feels like it would be very, very sweet, very, very sugary, but I don't know, just because it's got that churro toffee and white chocolate, it sounds delightful to me. I feel like the marshmallow is just a way to kind of get it into my mouth.
You know who would like this?
Who?
Catsper, because he got a Tigger Tail.
Oh, he did. That's right.
And he thought it was wonderful. Mm-hmm. So I'm sure he would just love this. I also want to say, I think we need to get a shirt into our store that has you that says delightful on it. Delightful. Because like everything that you like, you're like delightful. So I feel like it would really just kind of go like a little animated version of you with like a Dole Whip, and it just says like delightful.
Delightful. I guess I never realized I used that word that much. Whoops.
When you're talking about food or beverages, delightful is your word.
It's Disney delightful.
There you go.
Well, the Walt Disney Archives will have a major exhibit at the Bowers Museum in Santa Ana from March 7th through August 30th. More than 400 objects will be on display for the exhibit called Inside the Walt Disney Archives, 50 Years of Preserving the Magic. D23 members and Bowers Museum members will get early access to the exhibit. Walt Disney's office set used in the film Saving Mr. Banks, production models from Peter Pan and Frozen, and costumes are some of the items featured.
You know me. We've talked about this when we were at D23. Anything from the Walt Disney Archives, mm-hmm. I am there, because I love seeing things that are part of the history of the company. I love seeing things that are from the movies. Even, you know, I'm not a big Frozen fan. I still think it'd be cool to see production models from
that.
So I wish I could be there to see this. It sounds amazing. And it's in Santa Ana, which is very close to Disneyland. So if you're in the area from March 7th through August 30th, like this upcoming summer, mm-hmm. I would say take an afternoon maybe, or a day,
a full day, probably,
to go check this out. And remember, if you're a D23 member or you already are a member of the Bowers Museum, I would check with their website or give them a call and see when the early access begins, because mm-hmm. I was not able to find that information yet online.
Yeah, I just checked D23 today because I was curious if they had announced any of their 2020 event dates yet, and they have not announced anything date-wise for this one yet that I could find. But yes, very, very exciting. If I had a teleporter, I would be there probably every weekend. I'd be like at Disneyland one day and at this exhibit the other.
Well, even like when we were at the D23 Expo, when we went to the archive section that had all the like outfit, that the outfits and stuff? Mm-hmm. We went in there a couple times and enjoyed it both times.
I had gone in, I went in there probably a handful of times. Mm-hmm. It was just amazing to be able to look at that stuff so up close. The other thing that was just incredible to me was that none of these things were behind glass. It wasn't like you could like, don't do it, but you could touch it if you wanted to. There was no barrier between you and these objects, which just made it that much more amazing, because there was, I mean, you could see every single fine detail. Sometimes it's hard to go to displays that are in like those cases because the lighting kind of bounces around. Even when we were at D23, they had Marvel costumes that were like in display cases, and it was really hard to kind of really get a good feel of the details of them, but just because it gets a little distorted when you're trying to look at it through the case.
Yeah.
Same thing, the lighting kind of makes it not as crisp, I guess, for you to be able to see. So I really appreciated the fact that the archives trusted all of us at D23 to respect the items that they had on display. And it was just amazing. I don't think I will ever forget looking into Cinderella's carriage that they had on display there. And I was just amazed at how there was more detail, I think, inside of that carriage than there was outside of the carriage, which was just mind-boggling to me because you don't ever see the inside of the carriage in the film, but they spent all that extra time to make sure to get all those details right.
Yeah, it's amazing how much detail and effort that they put into things that, like, on film, you're not really going to see it. I also wanted to say, we didn't put this in our script, but I wanted to say I saw Amanda C. in our chat posted that a link to, there's going to be another auction featuring Disneyland collectibles at Van Eaton Galleries. Once again, we talked about this, I want to say 6 to 10 months ago, a different one. And so it's going to be December 7th, and then a Disney World auction is going to follow on December 8th. So I'll put a link to this in our show notes so you guys can go look at it. But basically, there's more Haunted Mansion hand-painted stretch portraits, a mechanical frame from an audio animatronic, a attraction poster, an actual original Space Mountain attraction vehicle, an original People Mover attraction vehicle, a Small World animatronic doll. These are just some of the highlights of these things. So,
It's just crazy. Always amazing to me when they have these auctions that everyday people had these things in their personal collections. It's just amazing to me because walking, like the photos and the videos that we saw of the big auction that they had earlier this year at the Van Eaton Galleries, that looked like walking through a museum to me. And the fact that this was somebody's personal collection is just crazy. I think that's amazing.
Yeah. I mean, if I could, I would, and I know you would too, because especially like that painting of the Haunted Mansion, you know, from the stretching gallery,
I would die just to see it. I don't know what I would be too terrified to own it in my home because I would be so afraid of ruining it.
You don't want
to
spend $100,000 to $150,000 for it?
Well, okay, so if I had that much money, I would just buy these things and open my own Disneyland museum and then have people there to make sure that everything is preserved the correct way and that it doesn't get messed up and so that generations can appreciate these
things. I will say
too,
an original People Mover attraction vehicle for $25,000 to $35,000 is not that bad.
You think that's a steal? What, are you going to put it in the middle of your living room?
I don't know. You know what I would do with it? I would put it where we record the podcast and we would sit in it
there
and we'd record
go.
The podcast there. You know, I mean, and then I could be creeped out with the Small World animatronic doll that would just sit there creeping me out forever. So, well, Disneyland has been a flutter of activity recently as crews have been on hand to record segments for two upcoming TV specials. On November 28th, segments that were filmed will air on the Wonderful World of Disney Magical Holiday Celebration and some other segments on Christmas Day for the Disney Parks Magical Christmas Day Parade. The Christmas Fantasy Parade, fireworks, and Star Wars Galaxy's Edge were filmed for these specials.
So it was kind of interesting because they were talking about, we got this article from the Disney Food Blog and they were kind of talking about, you know, how this was set up, you know, kind of showed photos of the setup in the park, which is just kind of strange because they had like this big stage on Main Street. And then, of course, they have all sorts of photos from the things that they were filming, which the big thing was the parade. But the thing that they mentioned that I thought was funny was that you kind of don't, I mean, I wouldn't think of this if I went to a holiday taping, but they don't, you don't just watch the parade like normal. They kind of present the parade a different way. They might have to redo some things so that they can get shots just right and that sort of thing. So I think that'd be interesting just to watch kind of the process of how they put these wonderful TV shows together so that people at home can also enjoy the magic, the holiday magic too. And then the other thing too is they had another big stage over in Galaxy's Edge. It reminded me a lot of when they had the, did kind of like the dedication, because they had the stage set up in front of the Falcon there.
Now, what's funny to me, I don't know exactly the day that they filmed this for the Christmas Fantasy Parade, but I was looking at these pictures and I don't know why, but the crowd behind them caught me. And this is a very small crowd.
It is.
For mm-hmm. a parade. Because I feel like when we were there, it was like deep and busy for these parades. I mean, it was the electrical parade in their defense. But this looks like just like people sitting on the sidewalk and then one row of people standing behind them. And I feel like that is just not usually the case.
Well, the other interesting thing could be, too, is maybe they did that on purpose. Or maybe they kind of purposely staggered the crowd in certain areas because sure. this is where the camera is going to be. So they kind of purposely had it thinned in some spots and then kind of made it thicker looking in other
you mean
spots. I don't know.
They don't want to broadcast to the whole world that Disneyland, like, is crazy packed with people a lot of the time.
That could be.
Especially for Christmas. I always think these things are interesting because when I was a kid, I swore that this was live from the parks because they've done this for a number of years. And I remember thinking like, oh, this is happening right now. But like, obviously it's recorded even before Thanksgiving, which is mm-hmm. crazy for the Christmas parade. But it's cool. I'm just glad they're in Disneyland and not just in Disney World because that was also a problem there for quite a long time.
Military members and their families can take advantage of some great rates for the 2020 year at the resort. Most nights from January 1st through December 17th, 2020 are included. For rates and to book this deal, check out the link in our show notes.
Yeah, there's not a lot of information or details. The link on Disney's website basically says, we've got this great rate, or we've got these great rates for military and their spouses. Call us to find out availability.
Yeah, and this
and stuff.
Is rates for like for staying at the hotels.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, it doesn't include like tickets and stuff. But I assume that some of these rates, when we talked with Tim about some of these military discounts, it can be quite a deal. So the fact that it goes basically the entire year to basically the holidays next year, not bad. Well, since we've been talking so much about fuel rods at the parks, we thought it was a good idea to pass along that there's a new swap location in the Five and Dime in Disney California Adventure.
Well, if you have access to Apple Music, you can get the soundtrack to the Festival of the Holidays playlist. The easiest way to find it is to launch the Play Disney Parks app and tap on the link, or you can search for Festival of the Holidays in Apple Music.
I think it's cool that they're finally putting some park stuff like
yes.
just in these streaming apps, because one of the things I used to do when I was younger was I was, you know, the crazy person who liked Disneyland so much. I used to like buying like the CDs because I still have my CD somewhere of the Electrical Parade and Fantasmic like together.
Oh, cool.
And
yeah.
of course, the beginning of the 2000s, they had the whole on demand thing where you could go through kind of like the posters, but mm-hmm. you could pick tracks that you wanted and it would put it on a CD for you.
That's neat.
And they didn't have everything because there was like licensing issues and stuff, but like you used to be able to do these custom things and get
neat.
Just the soundtracks
yeah.
and stuff you wanted. And then, of course, they released, for the 50th anniversary, they released like a whole like five-disc collection that had everything.
I have...
Well, you have that one Disney Parks CD
yeah,
or whatever.
I don't remember what it's called, though. Yes, I have the Walt Disney Records, the Legacy Collection, Disneyland, on my phone. And it's so, so much music. I am such a nerd. Whenever I'm downstairs in my soap kitchen making soap, I'm jamming out to Disney music. It's either my Disney Pandora or it is that, the Legacy Collection that I have on my Apple iTunes.
I mean, they have some great music in the parks.
You know, and I think this is good too, because when we were there in August, Casper really liked the music that went along with the fireworks. And so it kind of took a little bit of digging to find it. So it would have been nice if you could just
have it,
you know, if you go in the app and you could just purchase the song, you know, the one song that he really liked from the fireworks, or, you know, kind of however you went. But instead of, hang on, let's try and listen to the lyrics and we'll try and figure out what this song is called.
Sure.
You know, and then try and find it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I think that going forward, Disney should really try to have a lot of the rights for these things where they can put them on streaming services or sell them, because I think they are starting to realize that like there is a large group of people who would love to have access to this stuff.
Yeah.
So why keep it to yourself?
Mm-hmm. Well, the one thing I'm thinking about is if we could get the Paint the Night soundtrack.
I have a version of that, by the way, that somebody took from, it was a rehearsal CD because somebody like that was in the parade, they got a rehearsal CD to like practice their moves. Mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. It comes from that. Well, the Disneyland annual pass holder Twitter account teased an update coming to the Play Disney Parks app for the Indiana Jones adventure. The app will give guests access to games and puzzles while waiting to explore the Temple of the Forbidden Eye.
So perfect timing, and I am very excited about this because obviously I think they're going to be making these enhancements when the ride's going to be down for its major refurbishment. Mm-hmm. Perfect time for them to make little updates to the queue. However, the thing that's most exciting to me about this queue is very interactive. Mm-hmm. However, because of FastPass and just how it is set up, you don't really spend too much time in the queue necessarily. So it'll be nice for them to kind of revitalize these things that are already in the queue. I mean, they used to have those the decoder cards, and I know that they've
given
those.
They should put that
in the app. Yep, I know that. I'm sure the decoder card is going to be included in the app. I don't know how they couldn't, right? But yeah, so there are things that they have done to kind of make this more. It's like this. It was almost like this was like, how do I even want to explain this? This queue, it was kind of the first interactive queue, I guess would be a good way of saying it. Sure. And it like they had physical things for you to do stuff, and now we have that in the app, so it makes total sense to integrate this queue into the app.
You know what they should do? They should use the technology that they have in the Play Disney Parks app for Galaxy's Edge with that translation.
Yeah.
So you could like hold it to the wall and it would translate.
Instead of using the decoder?
Mm-hmm. Because you're right, you don't spend that much time. So if you could just point it at the wall and see what it says,
instead
of sitting there going, hold on.
Right.
This. Mm-hmm, and yeah. Mm-hmm. So one other piece I wanted to pass along that also didn't make it into our news, but I've seen is they have a new design for the annual pass.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What do you think of the design?
You know, I kind of like it because I thought the old pass was a little, I don't know. It didn't feel very special to me. It was just, you know, like a blue background with a couple characters on it. And this one actually has like the AP logo on it. So it feels more specific. The other one, how do I want to say this politely? I could very easily see how somebody would think that it was maybe a Disney gift card and not an annual pass. Whereas this one is very clearly states that it's an annual passport.
I just look at, well, two things. One, the design that you have, Teresa, mm-hmm. that has been the design, I swear, and I could be wrong, but I swear it's been that design since the last time I had an annual pass, and that was like 12 years ago. Second, the design that they have for the passes over in like Disneyland Paris look amazing because they have different levels, just mm-hmm. like we do here. Mm-hmm. They have like Tinkerbell on it making the castle. Like, I just think that it looks way more magical and special, like you were saying. And I feel like this one is just kind of, because it looks like the old annual pass magnets that you could get for mm-hmm. your car. That's just like Mickey Mouse and says annual pass Disneyland Resort. So I don't think it's that exciting. I also feel, and I'm afraid, that it's going to look like that, and they're going to use it in Disney World, too, and it's going to look the same, except for it's going to say Disney World. I don't know. I think it looks kind of not special.
I think it looks, I like it better than what the original was, which was just Mickey, Donald, and Goofy. I mean, I thought it was cute, but it looked and it felt like a gift card to me. Mm-hmm. I am one of those weird people that gets really excited for the whenever I would get the printed park tickets.
Sure.
And I saved all of them because they were themed and they had all sorts of different stuff. And I would make Vern save his too because there's a rotation of maybe four or five different designs whenever they change it up. So last year for Pixar Fest, it was all Pixar characters. This year when we were there, Galaxy's Edge. There was Pixar. It was different
cars,
scenes.
I think Pixar Pier.
Yep, different scenes around the resorts. So yeah, I don't know. I like this better, but I'm with you. I really like what Paris's looks like too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It looks, Paris's almost look like a credit card. Mm-hmm. Like it kind of reminds me of what the Disney Visa rewards mm-hmm. redemption card looks like.
Yeah. Well, I was telling James that I thought it'd be really cool for them to have like, so my Disney rewards Visa card mm-hmm. has the 60th anniversary castle on it and it's all sparkly. Obviously, you're not going to have a 60th anniversary castle anymore, but it'd be really cool to have something like that that's like sparkly and everything, because then people are like, but I was also thinking
magical
that how much longer is it going to be a physical card?
Don't say that.
I'm just saying. I'm sure they'll always have some version, but I'm just saying, because I was thinking, I was talking to James when I saw this on Twitter.
We still have the paper tickets, so
that's true.
But I saw we're gonna have a physical card for a while.
But I saw online when I saw that this somebody posted this design, and I said, you know, if you buy a ticket online now, mm-hmm. You probably just have it like in your phone. Like if you buy it through the app, you probably just have the QR code and that's it. Because you scan it at the thing and they probably take your picture and you're done.
So this is, so the last trip I learned this because they had their tickets already linked to their, my family had their tickets already linked to their phone.
Yep.
And the first day that we went in, they scanned the phone, but then they also handed everybody a physical ticket.
Oh, maybe in case like the phone died or something.
Mm-hmm. Maybe that's like your backup. Or instead of just one person, same thing when we were there for D23, you had all of our tickets scanned into your phone.
Yep.
But the first day they handed each of us a physical paper ticket.
Oh yeah, I suppose.
So then that way if something, you know, if we get separated or you're right, if something happens, like if the app crashes or whatever.
Oh yeah, I didn't even think about that.
You know, it's your backup. It's your physical backup.
Sure.
Well, if Disney won't add some live entertainment to Galaxy's Edge, the guests will. On November 17th, guests gathered in the land to celebrate Life Day. Life Day was introduced to the Star Wars universe with the infamous Star Wars Holiday Special in 1978. Carols, a procession, plenty of guests in costumes, and more made up the celebration.
So I thought this was interesting because there were some people in costumes, and I thought that they had a pretty strict policy on costumes in the park, but it didn't seem like they seemed to care with this. Also, Chewbacca, who was in the land, kind of took part of it. I don't know if that was, looked down upon by management or something. But also, it was nice because there was, all the characters in the land kind of took part of it. So,
yes,
I think this goes to show that there is a lot of Star Wars fans and a lot of people that are interested in having Galaxy's Edge be more than kind of what it is. And they mm-hmm. really should add some more of that atmospheric entertainment that, you know, they had added some things, you know, to Frontierland. So I think that they should do some stuff like that with Star Wars.
Well, you know, and I feel that this is the perfect kind of holiday tie-in for this area, because yeah. you can't really put like Christmas trees and sure. snow on Batuu because they probably don't have that on their planet. But this, you know, Chewbacca is a very big character in this planet, yep. in this universe. So the fact that we have this holiday around the same time as our holiday time, it makes perfect sense. The photos online that we see that Mice Chat posted are beautiful because mm-hmm. with the celebration, they actually had these little kind of clear orbs and they had lights that were underneath them. So they glowed and they did this little procession with these glowing orbs in Galaxy's Edge at dusk or at night. And it looks beautiful. There's even a picture here of Chewbacca holding a Life Day orb. I have not seen the Star Wars Christmas special.
Nobody has.
No, I know. But because seeing like how many fans were so excited about this and went to the resort to celebrate this day really makes me want to kind of dig into this a little bit more and learn more about, you know, what all is Life Day, what kind of goes behind it. Big crowd, it looks like. I know we had one of our supporters in the chat, Chris Anthony, was very excited to go, and she planned on going to the Life Day event as well. So the one thing that I always wonder about these extra little, like, fan-held events is, How does a Star Wars fan find out about this event going on, since it isn't something that Disney is putting on, that it's a separate group? You know, I always wonder how these groups get the word out.
It's probably like most things where this
social
group
media.
Of people, it's, yeah, they probably have groups on social media or they have forums somewhere that they yeah. all hang out, you know, so these are like, you know, they're diehard fans, mm-hmm. of course, like us. Like if we want to find something, we could go to some forums on different sites and whatnot. So I'm kind of excited for this. I'm glad that people are enjoying it. There's quite a few people that were there. So,
yeah, it looks like there was a great turnout.
Yeah. Yeah. So hopefully Disney will do something with it.
Well, now we take a trip to Trivia Land, where producer James tries to stump us with some Disney trivia. He's going to read us the questions, we're going to try to answer them, and then he will give us the correct answers after our discussion topic. So what do you have for us this week, James?
I got some good ones for you. Maybe you'll feel good after this week. We'll see how it goes. So question one comes from Barbara B. She asks, what movie provided a significant portion of the revenue to build New Orleans Square and Pirates of the Caribbean?
Was it Mary Poppins?
I was going to say Mary Poppins. Yeah, Mary Poppins.
Your brain is connected today, apparently. Question number two. The Haunted Mansion uses the Omni Mover to take guests through the attraction. What other attraction in the past used the Omni Mover for a passenger carrier?
In the past?
It was Journey Through Inner... No.
Oh, yeah, where they shrunk you down.
Yeah.
What the heck was that called?
I think it was Journey Through Inner Space, wasn't it? Or, because it's where Star Tours is now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, Journey Through Inner Space.
Something Inner Space. it's where...
Yeah, it's where they shrink you down.
But it's where Star Tours mm-hmm, is now. Mm-hmm. Adventure Through Inner
Adventure,
Space.
Adventure, yes, you're right.
That was a light bulb moment if you've ever seen one on a podcast. Question number three.
You could probably hear the filament.
Yeah, it really went off. So question number three comes from Liz D. She asks, who plays the head in the crystal ball during Haunted Mansion Holiday?
Who's the face?
You got it.
Leota Toombs, isn't it?
Is that your final answer?
I thought that in the Imagineering story, it was Leota Toombs. It was Leota Toombs.
Kim Irvine.
Okay. I'm going to say Toombs. You're going to say Irvine.
Yes.
This feels like a moment of Teresa not letting Tag piggyback if there's ever been one. Question number four.
He could have piggybacked. He doesn't want to, though.
Question number four.
No, because I watched the Imagineering story, and I swear. Anyway, I'm probably wrong.
If you're wrong, you better watch it again.
Please leave that in the podcast.
Oh, I will leave it in there.
Because I watched the Imagineering story.
I just wish you could see his arms flailing like they did. All right, and our last question this week comes from Richard S. He says, there are six continents featured on It's a Small World. Hint, the missing one is Antarctica. What order do they appear in?
Oh, my.
You think I remember what order? I probably couldn't even tell you a dozen countries that are in there.
Oh, what order? Okay, let's think. I don't know.
And for reference, the Central American countries he has grouped with South America for this.
I'm not even going to try.
Helpful. That was helpful.
There are six options. You better try.
What are the continents?
I'm going to say Europe.
Like Europe, Asia, mm-hmm. Africa, South America, North America. Am I missing one? I'm missing one.
Yeah, what's like...
Australia/Oceania would be the other way to call it.
So, okay, so I think...
That's somewhere in the middle because that's where what's her butt is.
I think...
That's where it's a little...
Very specific
is. Ariel. Where Ariel is.
So, okay, so I think...
The funny thing is you probably knew what I meant.
Maybe. I was more thinking Finding Nemo.
I'm just going to guess because I'm not going to know anyway.
Yeah, I think Europe's first.
Okay. I'm going to say North...
Actually, I don't know.
I'm going to say North America, no. Europe. I know.
North America's at the end.
I don't care. North America, Europe, South America, Asia, Australia, whatever, and what did I miss?
Africa.
Africa. That's not right, because Africa's in the middle somewhere. I wonder if it journeys around the world. I wonder if it's Europe, Asia, Australia, North America, South America, Africa.
That would be really smart.
That would be smart.
That's my answer.
Okay, so I think it's Europe, Asia, South America, Australia, Africa, and then North America.
Okay.
We'll see how they do after this week's discussion topic.
Hurt my head almost exploded with that question. Well, this week we're actually going to talk about the history behind the partner statue. Everyone I think that's ever visited the Disneyland Resort knows the partner statue. It's that big, beautiful bronze statue right in the center of the hub with Walt Disney and Mickey Mouse. Classic.
Mm-hmm.
Classic. This statue actually on Mickey's birthday celebrated its 26th anniversary.
Wow.
So that's kind of why we decided to talk about the partner statue this week.
Every time I think of partner statue, all I can remember is the Walk in Walt's Footsteps tour. And I have I will tell the story when we get to that part of the history, but it is very touching. And we'll see if I can make it through telling the story without tearing up for the podcast.
So we're going to start we're going to give a little bit of a history of the statue itself, but I feel like we also need to take a couple steps back from that and talk about the sculptor and the people that are behind the creation of this statue. Mm-hmm. So the sculptor's name, his name is Blaine Gibson. He started his Disney career in 1939, and he was actually an apprentice animation artist. He did spend 10 years working in effects animation, but sculpting was always a passion and a hobby for Gibson. He spent his days animating for Disney, and then at night he'd go home and he'd sculpt. He actually would take classes. He had displays that were out so the public could look and see his sculptures. And actually Walt had gone to one of his
shows
and saw his work and was very impressed by it. And so because Walt noticed his interest and skills in sculpture, Walt had invited Blaine to wed to help work on Disneyland.
Well, then while working for Disneyland, he ended up creating and sculpting, of course, Indian chiefs for like around Frontierland and the Rivers of America there, mermaids, which I think were in the submarine voyage attraction, bathing elements, of course, everybody knows from the Jungle Cruise, and eventually President Lincoln himself for mm-hmm. Great Moments with Mr. Lincoln, Pirates for Pirates of the Caribbean, and Ghosts for the Haunted Mansion. He's touched like all these major things.
Yeah, a lot of things. And the thing that's really cool is he did a lot of the sculpting for these things that then would create the faces for the animatronics. Not that his sculpture is actually, like, he didn't sculpt the thing that you see as Lincoln. He sculpted what they created the face for.
Yeah, but that's still pretty damn cool.
Because it's made out of like a different, I do not know the technical term, so please forgive me. But it's made out of a different material so that it's flexible.
Sure.
But yes, very, very cool. So if you have watched the Imagineering story, the first episode, they actually show him sculpting Lincoln mm-hmm. In one of those scenes there. I thought that was really, really cool footage. Well, Blaine actually retired from the Disney company in 1983 and moved out to Sedona, Arizona. But there he did still continue to work on projects for the Disney company. He worked on such things as the Great Movie Ride. He even directed and sculpted a new president every 4 years up to George W. Bush for the Hall of Presidents attraction in Walt Disney World.
That's so cool.
That's crazy to me that most, like all but two of those presidents in the Hall of Presidents were sculpted and directed. The sculpting and the direction of the sculpture was done by this man. It did say that he did oversee and help with President Obama's sculpting. He didn't physically do it himself.
Sure. That's still kind of a cool legacy.
That's
like
crazy.
Like, hey Blaine, we need you back to do the next one. Like that somebody hadn't kind of taken over the mantle from that. Mm-hmm. Although apparently now with between Obama because he consulted, and then with President Trump. Yeah, so
she had passed by then. So
yeah. Well, but I mean, like somebody else had taken over the mantle, basically. So in 1962, Richard Irvine actually urged Blaine to create a sculpture of a bust of Walt Disney himself as like a nice thank you gift for him. And when it was given to Walt, Gibson claimed that Walt said, "What am I going to do with this? Statues are for dead people."
It was kind of a funny story because it sounded like Gibson just wasn't really he didn't feel like he had dedicated enough time to it and he wasn't super happy with it, but presented it anyways. And then this was kind of the reaction he got for Walt. But, you know, even though Gibson really did want to destroy this bust gift and replace it, the bust was actually kept at WED and then later at Retlaw. So it did hang around for a while. He did also say in a past interview that he had the clay model still at home and he just couldn't come to terms with like destroying it and wrecking it, so he actually held on to the clay model of it for quite some time.
Well, of course, after Walt passed away, Gibson worked on a memorial medal that featured a headshot of Walt for Cal Arts, which is, of course, when we talked with Chrysanthi, she talked about that Disney's heavily involved with Cal Arts. So at that time, Lillian Disney, Walt's wife, told him that she didn't ever want a bust or a portrait or a statue of Walt to be done.
Yeah.
So I assume that this is kind of one of those things where, you know, I'm trying to imagine probably what she's thinking and probably what Walt's kind of wanted. Like, you know, Disneyland's a place for people, families to come and have fun and stuff. And do you really want like a statue of the dead founder kind of there. I mean, I can understand why maybe him and Lillian wouldn't like this idea necessarily, especially at the time. Plus, for Lillian, you have to think, like, it'd be a reminder of your husband who passed
away.
Well,
and, you know, the other hard thing, too, is when it comes to, you know, having bust sculptures, statues of people that you know, having them come out and having them look right.
That's true.
You know, even if it's a very, very talented person, if it's somebody that you knew in life and you knew very well, it's very hard to capture their image, their spirit, you know, in a sculpture. So I can see how that'd be hard to kind of want something created like that, that maybe isn't going to look, you know, maybe to the family doesn't look right or something like that. Well, that is kind of a little bit of a backstory about Gibson, who is a sculptor, or the sculptor for the partner statue. We also need to talk about another person. His name is Charles Boyer. He joined the Disney company in 1960 and eventually became Disneyland's master illustrator. During his career, he produced almost 50 collectible lithographs, including Walt's self-portrait, which I think every time I go to Disneyland, I feel like I see this self-portrait. Do you know what this one is?
I feel like I might, but I want you to show me just in case. Is it the one where he's like looking over and it's like, is it like Mickey? Yeah.
Yeah, it's where he's, there's a couple different versions of it, but the one that I always think of is where it's Walt drawing and on his big piece of paper is Mickey Mouse, classic Mickey Mouse, and he's kind of looking over and he's looking at himself in the mirror. I have seen a kind of a spinoff on that where it's Mickey sitting in the artist chair looking at himself in a mirror and he's actually drawing Walt Disney.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But the original is Walt as the artist.
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen some pictures of this before, so that's really interesting. So Charles Boyer also did artwork for magazine covers and brochures and flyers and everything for the company. In 1981, he was commissioned to make a special lithograph titled Partners, which kind of is giving you some foreshadowing here, to honor Walt and Mickey. It was the original edition was available only to cast members and limited to 2,500 prints.
Yeah, we do kind of have a description of what this lithograph looked like. And what I was able to see was that Walt is standing on the right-hand side, not the left, like the statue, in the portrait. His left hand is a fist, and it's on his hip. He has a red tie, a light tan suit. Mickey's on his left, and he is holding Walt's hand. But Mickey's also mimicking Walt's pose, and he's got his fist on his hip as well. Mickey's wearing his like tuxedo Mickey get-up is what I call it. So it's the long black coat, the red pants, and the big yellow bow tie. They're both smiling and looking forward.
So the design, obviously, like you said, is different than the partner statue, but the concept of Walt and Mickey as partners and holding hands as they face the world together is apparent in the painting. So I kind of like this idea. And again, I'll get into this a little bit later once we get to it. But I just love the idea that like it's like them as partners, like that they both did this thing, because obviously everything, as Walt says, all the, you know, as was quoted as saying that, you know, he wants when they had the Disneyland special on ABC trying to build the park at the very end, he says, I just want everybody to remember that, like, I never want to lose sight that it was all started by a mouse. Yes. And they kind of, so Mickey Mouse was very important to him, even though a lot of times people look back at Walt and he was always on to the next thing. So he did animation and always pushed animation forward. Then he did some live action and animation and pushed that forward. And then he did the theme parks. And then, of course, before he passed, he was thinking about doing communities. But he was always remembering back that Mickey kind of helped started it.
Another key player for the partner statue that we also need to mention is actually Michael Eisner. And he came on in 1984 as a CEO of the Disney Company and was just full of ideas. One of his big goals was to try and increase attendance at the parks. We could kind of get into that. That's kind of its own thing. But he was okay with putting money into new attractions, but he understood that new attractions, of course, took time to build. Mm-hmm. And so it seems to me that he kind of wanted results now. So he did stuff like had a circus theme day. He kind of had a state fair themed.
He had a lot of kind of gimmicky things.
Yep, he had a lot of stuff, which a lot of people didn't really like. It did help with numbers, though. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they felt like it was kind of taking away from the park itself.
I will say, too, one of the reasons that he wanted results right now was and I know this is getting away from our main topic here, but he really saved the Disney company. Mm-hmm. Like, he came in when the company was about to get taken over and sold off in pieces. So as much as some people think back to the Eisner era and look on it poorly, we have to remember that without Michael Eisner, the Disney company probably would not exist as we know it today. And the parks would also not exist as we know it today.
Just crazy. But, you know, there was a very sad truth. Even though it had only been 20 years since Walt's passing, Walt Disney was being forgotten, sort of. There's a new generation of children out there that didn't grow up seeing him on TV each week. And they really were looking for a way to kind of spotlight the memory of Walt Disney and to kind of figure out how to honor him. Some other big people that they were talking about and they in this meeting were like, nobody knows who Hershey, everybody knows what a Hershey's candy bar, but nobody knows the man behind that company. You know, those people sometimes, the product kind of overshadows the person.
Yeah.
So they wanted to make sure that that didn't happen with Walt.
Yeah. Well, and Eisner agreed with that sentiment and thought that, bringing his memory kind of more back to the forefront would help promote the brand as well. Because, you know, I have to imagine that people that grew up with Walt on TV probably had fond memories of seeing him present these things. And he's very charismatic, like Steve Jobs of our age, right? Mm-hmm. That like people just really were drawn to him and like, you know, you could sell anything because like he was just so charismatic. So I think it did help promote it to these people who are now parents and had small children that didn't know who Disney was. So the challenge was to convince, of course, the surviving Disney family members, especially his, you know, widow wife, Lillian, that a statue would be wonderful as to remember Walt by. So again, she didn't want a bust or a statue or anything. So they kind of already had an uphill battle.
Yes. Well, and the statue, they were planning to have it unveiled and to help celebrate Mickey's 65th birthday. So Marty Sklar and Gibson were actually good friends. And according to a 1995 interview, Blaine Gibson recalled, "It started one day when Marty Sklar called me on the phone and asked if I'd be interested in doing a life-size statue of Walt holding Mickey's hand. I didn't presume to be able to capture all of the uniqueness of Walt. I started making some little drawings, fairly crude sketches, because I don't like to spend too much time drawing. Knowing the real work is going to come in three dimensions, I don't like to tie myself down with the drawings."
Yeah. So while Blaine was working on the project, he told another interviewer, quote, "I chose to depict Walt as he was in 1954. I think that was when Walt was in his prime. It was tough trying to match the media image of Walt with one the public knows to the real Walt, the one we knew. I didn't like to leave a sculpture until it had a feeling of life. I had done a bust of Walt in terracotta while he was alive, but it wasn't quite right. I hope this time I've captured that magical spirit of his. I think Walt is admiring the park and saying, 'Mickey, look what we've done.'" So this is where the story comes in for me that I have of the Walt and Walt's Footsteps tours. And the tour guide that I was with said that the statue, so kind of similar to what he was saying, but the tour guide said that basically it's Walt and holding Mickey's hand, kind of looking out over Disneyland and saying, "Look what we've created together." And I feel like that's a little more personable and a little emotional, more than basically just whatever he just said. More than "look what we've done." So
before they actually decided to have the partner statue be what it is today, there were several different things that were kind of considered. One of the images featured a young Mickey kind of running ahead and pulling Walt along, but that was rejected because it seemed a little awkward and strange of Mickey to kind of be dragging Walt forward. Another one featured Walt with the rolled up blueprints of Epcot in his right hand and using them to point forward.
Oh.
Another one had Walt with an open-handed wave, and that was actually a suggestion by Marty Sklar because he didn't like the concept of Walt's pointing. Mm-hmm. And then while in Mickey's hand was a small black globe with two mouse ears. One image that also popped up in some sketches was Mickey actually with an ice cream cone. And they actually liked that composition so much that they actually had Blaine go as far as to make a finished maquette of it. Maquette. So kind of like a little
model
of it.
Between Marty Sklar and Jack Lindquist, who was the Disneyland president at the time, and of course Imagineer John Hench, they had a meeting about this and thought that maybe it made Mickey seem a little too immature, and that it may favor one lessee like Nestle or Carnation, who were in the parks at the time. And they agreed to just finally have Mickey's arm at his side. So I think it worked out better, and it kind of did more of an emphasis on Walt, mm-hmm. which you know, when you were describing the different things, I was like, well, these kind of sound cool, but I really like how it turned out in the end. So,
you know, and we know the partner statue and love the partner statue as it is today. So it's very hard to ever imagine it being something else. But I think the thing that I really appreciate about the design of it is that both Mickey and Walt just look very happy and very proud. So to me, if Mickey holding an ice cream cone would have just felt like maybe it's Walt and Mickey enjoying the park together versus how the feel of it now is just this kind of like feeling of accomplishment more so.
Yeah. And then, of course, one of the other things that he wanted to make sure was absolutely right, because there was a lot of things that you could kind of pull from Walt's physical appearance. You know, the fact that, like, even when he passed away, he still had his dark hair and dark eyebrows and stuff. And extremely dark eyes. It was the eyes that he really wanted to get right. So there are certain things like his bent nose or his eyebrow that would go up, those things. It's kind of hard to depict that kind of in a statue, but the eyes is what he thought was the thing that you really needed to get right. So he spent a lot of time thinking about it sculpturally and trying to get it just right. Yeah, so with the techniques of the foundry work, they were able to vary colors with chemical oxidation with the bronze that the statue is made out of. So they were able to make the hair a little bit darker, the darkness of the suit and tie kind of pop out. So that's pretty cool, because I know a lot of times you look at a bronze statue and it's all like the same color and there's not a lot of definition. So it's really neat that, as with everything, Disney kind of went that extra mile to make sure that everything was done really kind of in a really awesome way.
So Blaine actually sculpted the clay model back home in Sedona, Arizona, and he worked very carefully on the head and the body, and he did have a young assistant that helped him, because at the time he was, I think, like 70 years old or something.
Wow.
So he was, you know, getting up there in age, so he did need, it was a lot of physically moving a lot of clay, so he did have someone helping him with that. The other thing I think that's interesting is the figure of Walt is actually larger than life. Walt was about 5'10" tall, but the statue actually has him at 6'5".
Obviously a little bit longer now. Of course, how do you figure out the size of Mickey Mouse? This is actually a really interesting story. So,
very cool story.
So they chose the size based on a moment from the animated short, The Pointer, from 1939, that where there's a scene where a frightened Mickey as a hunter is overshadowed by a growling, threatening bear, and there's this whole situation. And Walt recorded the voice for Mickey for this short, and he couldn't help but feel like Mickey and added all these gestures and everything while he's doing it. And then at one point during his speech, he put his hand out in front of him to indicate that Mickey was about 3 feet tall, and that's the only time that anybody ever knew how big Walt thought Mickey was. So that's pretty cool.
I think it's amazing how, you know, that one little moment in time kind of dictated everything, really, because every time you see Mickey next to a person, he's about that height. I'm thinking about like Fantasia. I feel like he's about that height compared to the composer or the, not the composer, the conductor in Fantasia, which, speaking of Fantasia, they talked about how they were trying to figure out how to have a 5-fingered man hold the hand of a 4-fingered animated mouse. So they actually decided to base how that was going to look on the time that animated Mickey did hold the hand of a real person in Fantasia. So in that movie, Mickey does shake the hand of the conductor, and that's kind of how they decided to hold the hand. And if you kind of look at it, they don't have their fingers aren't entwined. It's kind of one hand in the other, kind of more, I guess, cupped would be a good way of explaining it.
Yeah, and so there's a lot of detail, and actually next time we go to the park, I really want to kind of look for some of these things. This first one I actually knew about before, and basically on his tie, there is an STR logo, which refers to Smoke Tree Ranch, which is where he had a vacationary in Palm Springs. And then on Walt's right hand is the Irish Clodagh ring, wedding ring that he and his wife wore, in addition to his regular one on his left hand. And where, you know, he purchased these in 1948 on a trip to Ireland, where his ancestors once lived.
The interesting thing, though, is his left hand is the one that's holding Mickey's hand. So that's kind of something that you really have to look to be able to see his actual wedding ring, since Mickey's hand's kind of around it.
That's still pretty cool, though, that they added that detail, even though it's hard to see.
It is very cool. So in November of 1993 is when they decided to have this dedication ceremony. It was November 18th. They actually had a huge event the day before called Mickey's Worldwide Kids Party, which they had pizza, soda, games, music, and cartoons. And they had, it was 7,000 children. And these children were from many different countries. And it was just crazy because most of these kids had never even ridden on an airplane before. Some of them were for economically challenged areas, so they didn't even have shoes when they came. So the Disney company did supply all the children with shoes and any clothing needed. But they did have this fun party with Mickey and Minnie, Donald and Goofy, and some other characters came and joined in the festivities. But these children were then to be the guests of honor at the celebration for Mickey's birthday on the 18th and for the unveiling of the partner statue. So then on the day, on November 18th, 1993, which is, as we all know, Mickey's official birthday, guests all gathered for the ceremony, and it began at 11 a.m. And it was actually the ceremony. This was interesting to me because I did find some photos online. The ceremony was actually more in front of the castle. It wasn't in the hub
area. Interesting.
Where the,
okay,
where the statue is today. But there were VIP guests. There was John Hench, Blaine Gibson, of course, the sculptor, Mark and Alice Davis, Bill Farmer, who we know is the voice of Goofy, Wayne Allwine and Russi Taylor, which were the voices of Mickey and Minnie. Very, very fun. Lots of people came out for this. I'm just mind boggled that the partner statue has only been at Disneyland since 1993. I just can't imagine it not being there.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's
been really hard for me to like get over that in my mentally in my head. But Jack Lindquist, the president of Disneyland, he was the one that officiated the ceremony. He also officially retired from the Disney company at the end of that same day. So he spoke briefly and then introduced Roy E. Disney, who then spoke to the audience.
So along with the statue, there was a plaque that was with the statue that remains there to this day that says, I think most of all, what I want Disneyland to be is a happy place where parents and children can have fun together, Walt Disney. Of course, like I said earlier, this is something that is kind of a hallmark of the park mm-hmm. now, that they want, you know, that Walt Disney, that was like his main reason for making Disneyland, was he didn't want to sit on the bench anymore while the kid played on the merry-go-round. So and then of course there's a version of this same statue's partner statue in the Magic Kingdom, and that plaque states, we believe in our idea, a family park where parents and children could have fun together, Walt Disney. So a little bit different than the one at Disneyland. And at the unveiling in 1993, Blaine Gibson said, I thought that it was an honor to do a statue of Mickey and Walt, who was, in my opinion, the real genius behind all of this. For me, it was a labor of love. Walt gave me and many others some of the happiest times of our lives, and this project was important because it wasn't just for Walt, it was about Walt. Our faces are all we really have that can tell people who we are. Many people asked me what Walt might be saying as he stood there with Mickey. And the expression I tried to capture was Walt saying to Mickey, look what we've accomplished together, because truly they were very much a team through it all. So they do kind of have the thing. So I guess he was quoted variation of the same thing a couple times. So that's good. So Marty Sklar, who was then president of Imagineering, told press that was there, from now on, you can get three symbols of Disneyland in one photograph. What a memory and souvenir of Disneyland that'll be. Of course, that's Sleeping Beauty Castle, Walt, Mickey. It's true. I never actually thought about mm-hmm. that.
Very true. So the statue at Disneyland was the first partner statue. As you guys know, though, there are multiple partners statues now throughout the different parks and even at some of the Walt Disney Studio buildings. In June 1995, the next partner statue appeared at the hub of the Magic Kingdom over at Walt Disney World. The color of this statue is different than the one at Disneyland, and it just kind of, they did this to blend in with the color scheme at the Florida park better. Tokyo Disneyland also has a partner statue, and theirs is over at the exit of the World Bazaar, which is their version of Main Street. There's one at the Walt Disney Studios in Burbank, California, and then also in Disneyland Paris, at the Walt Disney Studios park there. The Walt Disney Studios in California, that was put into place in 2001, and the Disneyland Paris statue was put into place in 2002.
That's crazy, but it's good. And now, you know what's funny? After all of this talk of not wanting to have a statue of Walt. Now they're kind of all over the place. Also, there's that statue of Walt that is in Disney California Adventure mm-hmm. now on Buena Vista Street. With the new Epcot overhaul, there's going to be a one of Walt kind of sitting down, kind of looking off in future world. That's going to be a statue there for him. Mm-hmm. So it's really interesting that they have all these versions, and now they kind of have gotten over that hurdle of not having a statue, and now he's kind of all over
so
the place.
So now, this isn't a statue that is at Disneyland. I thought it was a great time to mention this statue, especially if anybody here has listened or has watched the Imagineering Stories part mm-hmm. one, part two. But Blaine did also make another statue of Walt's older brother, Roy Disney. And he's seated on a park bench beside Minnie Mouse at the Magic Kingdom in Florida. It's located approximately where Roy stood when he dedicated the park back in October of 1971. This statue was actually installed in October of 1999. So the thing that I think is really cool about this statue is, as we know, Roy kind of built this park for his little brother who had passed before he was able to see this park come together. But they're at opposite ends of Main Street, so they're actually looking at each other.
Aww.
So I think that's very sweet. And I think it's very cute that he's with Minnie and Walt's with Mickey.
Well, and the way that he is, he's sitting on the bench and he's holding Minnie's hand, but basically his hand is under Minnie's. And it said that basically that he is supporting her hand like he always supported Walt's mm-hmm. dream. So, mm-hmm. There is a quote here from Blaine that said that Roy is very underrated. And I believe that because yeah. Roy, you know, in the Imagineering story, they talked a lot about that, how, you know, Roy was there to enable Walt to kind of realize his dreams. Mm-hmm. And of course, the biggest one was Disney World. And I don't know if many people know this. I know this is a Disneyland podcast, but I think it's important to say that Disney World, the Magic Kingdom at Disney World, really, really was hard on Roy. And he worked so hard to get it realized because he knew it was so important to Walt. And then shortly after they dedicated it, he passed away.
Yeah, it was about only 3 months, I think.
So it was kind of his final thing that he had to get completed. You know, they always say people have like unfinished business. I think this was his unfinished business he needed to get done, and he got it done, and then mm-hmm. he could rest.
I would highly recommend for anybody that's listening that hasn't watched the Imagineering story on Disney Plus yet to do so. Episode one, I'm not going to give spoilers away, but episode one is basically about the creation of Disneyland. And so mm-hmm. there's a lot of talk about Walt, and you get to see all sorts of old footage of them actually like doing things like they're driving cars through what we now know as like the Rivers of the Jungle Cruise and yeah. like down Main Street. It was just crazy to see this old footage. Mm-hmm. But episode two is actually a lot about Roy and building the Magic Kingdom in Walt's shoes and kind of that whole mm-hmm. process. And yeah. That was a really cool, really eye-opening episode, and I'm really glad that I got to see it, and I've watched it a couple of times because that's just how much of a Disney nerd I am.
Yeah, the first episode is definitely like Walt's time. Mm-hmm. The second episode is very much Roy's time, yeah. kind of. And I'm interested for the next few episodes yes. because we're going to get more current, you know, mm-hmm, get up mm-hmm. to today. But it'll be interesting because like they'll probably be the next one after Roy will probably be like that weird in between era, and then we'll get to Michael Eisner's era, which produced a lot of attractions that we know and love today. And then, of course, we'll have to get up to today. So I'm really interested to see how they break the rest yes. of it up. It's really well done. I love the narration. Some of the footage I've never seen before.
It's incredible.
And they've made it look so beautiful.
We were talking about this before, and I think we talked about this probably on last week's podcast. But some of the footage of them in Disneyland, right, you know, like opening day Disneyland, the footage is so crisp and so mm-hmm. clear. It looks like they could have staged this and filmed it yesterday.
It's true.
It's just incredible.
Yeah.
So anyway, so we hope that you guys enjoyed kind of getting a little bit of a deeper look at the history of the partner statue. I know I really enjoyed looking at this. I totally fell down a rabbit hole looking at this stuff and told Tag, I'm like, we have to talk about this on the podcast. I think it's so fascinating. It's one of those fixtures of Disneyland that's there. We all know, love, and respect it, but I don't know how many of us actually know you know, kind of what went into creating the statue.
Well, I knew a little bit of the statue. Like, I knew some of the stuff from the tour I went on and just kind of like the fact it was there. I kind of had forgotten that it was, you know, not really that old in the grand scheme of things. But the other thing I thought was funny was you came over to record tonight and you said, oh, I only got halfway through the notes for this. And I said, what do you mean you only got halfway? She's like, well, I filled the whole section of the script. And I was like, how? So it's just the statue.
Yeah.
But there's a lot more.
Yeah, there's so much more to it than just the physical statue.
Yeah. So, well, we hope you guys enjoyed hearing about it. And if you have any interesting tidbits or favorite pictures in front of the statue, send them along to feedback@dlweekly.net. Post on social media. We'd love to see anything you guys have. I'm sure that everybody listening here probably has some picture of the partner statue.
I'm sure.
Well, if you enjoyed the show this week, please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to the show. By leaving a review, it helps get our ranking better and allows the community to grow.
Well, we hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of DL Weekly. You can support the show for as little as 25 cents an episode. If you'd like access to the supporter chat, it's only 75 cents an episode. So please consider joining supporters like Miguel V and head over to dlweekly.net/support. Now it's time to return to James over in Trivia Land to get the answers to this week's trivia.
Oh, geez. First of all, I'd like to thank Barbara B. and Liz D. for questions this week.
You don't want to thank Richard? Oh. Poor Richard. That was, like, I don't know if Tag is leaving that in the podcast, but after I got through that, I'm like, my head wants to explode now because of this question. Great questions.
Thank you to Barbara B., Liz D., and Richard S. for the questions this week, and I assume producer James for one of them.
I did do one of them.
Thanks, James.
All right. Our first question this week came from Barbara B., and she said, what movie provided a significant portion of the revenue to build New Orleans Square and Pirates? And you both got it right with Mary Poppins.
Bam.
Second question was, the Haunted Mansion uses the Omnimover system to take guests through the attraction. What other attraction in the past used the Omnimover for a passenger carrier? And you got there. It is Adventure Through Inner Space.
You know, it was an adventure just to get to that answer.
Yes. I mean,
through our inner brain.
One might also call it a journey or a voyage if you were. Our third question came from Liz D., and she was excited to ask this after watching a show on Disney Plus. Who plays the head in the crystal ball in the Haunted Mansion Holiday?
Oh, Holiday. That's why I missed it, because yes, of course it's Kim Irvine.
That's why he missed it.
I was so intent on that one.
I'm going to leave this in too, because I just did not hear the Holiday part. So I'd like to officially change my answer to Kim Irvine. But the original version, it was Leota Toombs.
That's true. We tried, didn't we, James?
You tried.
Said, are
you
sure?
Tried.
Are you giving me a point?
Your final answer?
Yeah, you can have that point. Out of pity and joy for the laughter you brought us.
Your pity point.
Thanks, Liz D.
All right, and the last one from Richard S.
No thanks, Richard S.
Six continents are featured on It's a Small World. Hint, Antarctica is not one of them. What order do they appear in? Teresa was on the right track.
Oh, no.
It is Europe, Asia, Africa, South America / Central America, Oceania or Australia, and end up in North America. So if you would have gotten Africa in the right place, you would have had that one right.
Dang.
So good work, Teresa.
I'm going to give her a half point because she got half of them in the right spot.
Well, thanks, Tig.
It's a good deal. So congratulations on your
winner. 3.5 points. We haven't had this good of a trivia week in a while.
I know.
So obviously that means I need some more stumpers to put these two back down a little bit.
No, thank you.
No. Barbara B. and Liz, they're helping us out here.
And half of Richard.
Teresa.
I thought that was a good question, though.
It was a good question.
That was a really good question.
Yeah, so if you got good questions like those, listeners, send me an email. It's trivia@dlweekly.net, and you'll hear it on the podcast most likely.
Well, we'll be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
So until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
Ladies and gentlemen, Disneyland has now ended its normal operating day. We hope you've enjoyed your visit to the Magic Kingdom and that you'll be back with us again soon.